Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Just when Leo Marvin thought he was getting away from it all.
As of this afternoon, I'm taking my family on vacation.
His old friend Bob Wiley showed up.
Dr. Marvin!
Oh my God.
I really appreciate this.
I don't want any of you letting Bob into this house.
He's a sweet guy. Didn't you invite Bob over for dinner?
Would you like some more chicken, Bob?
Will you stop that, please?
You're angry.
No, I don't get angry.
You're upset.
Welcome to Rewatchability. It's the podcast where we rewatch old movies and look at them now in the modern eye. Also, it's a podcast on the Entertainment One Podcast Network. I'm Robert Lerone. With me, as always, is
Blaine Waters.
And today we have a very special movie, a movie I know a lot of people are looking forward to hearing us talk about. But before we get into that, we want to thank our Patreons.
Oh, thank you, Patreons.
Because they keep us sane, to be honest.
Yeah, they deliver the Prozac in monthly installments of $1, $3, and $5.
Yeah, which isn't enough to actually buy the drugs that we need. So we're going to need you to pony up.
Rob keeps on getting them on the black market, so.
Yeah, though we have a good drug situation here in Canada.
Right.
We do still have to pay a little bit, but not like a bazillion dollars.
Yeah, I know. It's fair.
Yeah. Anyway, this week we're talking out against the healthcare industry.
Whoa.
Talking about What About Bob, the 1991 movie directed by Frank Oz, starring, of course, Bill Murray and Richard Dreyfuss. Now, this is a huge movie for a lot of people. Blaine, it was sort of your suggestion. So what is your experience with this movie?
I'll
let you start.
Well, it all goes back to, my mother raising me. Mm-hmm. And
go on about your mother.
Never being able to really talk about my... Should
Have
I lay down?
Oedipus? Or
No, I love this movie, Rob. I love it so much. Okay. I've seen it so many times, and I just love the shit. Frank Oz is hilarious as a director and the force behind this movie. Bill Murray...
Literally, he has the force as Yoda.
Right, yeah, exactly. He should have been doling out advice in this movie. That would have helped both characters.
Steps, baby, take you.
Baby Steps is a big part of this movie, just to explain that.
People know that.
Yeah, all right. Bill Murray's in this movie, and he's fucking fantastic from what I remembered before I watched it.
Okay.
We all love Bill Murray. There's nothing not to love, right? Except for his, like, drunk driving the golf cart or whatever that he got busted for in Greece.
We'll talk about some of Bill Murray's more unlovable aspects as we go on.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was a big movie. You watched it over and over again.
I did. I loved every, like, frustrating part of this movie. I don't know whether it's because when I was growing up, my mom was a foster parent, and we, like, had a lot of people that we invited into our family.
Right.
That became a part of our family. Like, Bob becomes a part of this family.
Right.
Although, no kid was ever as aggravating as Bob is in this movie.
Yeah.
They're all sweethearts. But I think that I liked this family a lot. I sided with the family a lot. But Bob is just the most charming character, too.
He's a very charming sociopath or whatever he is.
Yes, exactly. And I just loved watching Richard Dreyfuss get verklempt, all the angsty up. I just loved it so much. So I watched it a bunch, and I think it really has informed a lot of my humor and a lot of my, like, inviting myself into people's families a lot.
My God. So, you're a Bob.
So you're not doing anything this weekend, right? I can just come hang out with you and your girlfriend?
I have plans, actually.
Okay. Where are they? What about you? Did you see What About Bob?
I did a long time ago when it first came out. And at the time, I was just like way too young for it. I remember some scenes, but I just mostly remember it was the guy from Ghostbusters acting crazy and another guy, you know, looking like he's slowly going insane.
Right.
So I actually didn't see this movie since then at all, despite becoming aware that it is, you know, a well-regarded movie. Also, I think at the time, like, when I became aware of it, it was sort of during Bill Murray's Lost years.
Okay.
Like, there was a period, I think, between What About Bob specifically and up until Rushmore and Lost in Translation, right, where, I mean, let's just call it the Operation Dumbo Drop period.
Where he Operation Dumbo dropped out of existence in terms of Hollywood.
Well, it wasn't out of existence. It was just kind of embarrassing. You know, it wasn't – he wasn't doing the sort of work that we know and love him for now. And he hadn't become the sort of character that we know and love him for now. The lovable, charismatic Bill Murray.
That does your dishes when you have a party and shows up.
He's like larger than any of his roles at this point.
Yes.
You know, like he still makes movies apparently. But it doesn't matter because we're more interested when he shows up at a golf tournament and, you know, does a bunch of weird stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
So
when he acts like Bob on in the outside world.
When he acts like Bob. Or one of his other many lovable characters. So I didn't see this movie. So when you suggested it, and I should mention that you suggested it because you just wanted to talk about a movie that you liked.
I wanted to watch a vacation
from your problems.
Exactly. And it's a summer movie. It's no longer summer. But we're doing it. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know? Fuck anyone that says anything different.
Okay. Settle down.
You know, fuck you, listeners.
You can't fake Tourette's on this program.
Cack.
It's offensive.
All right.
So what about Bob?
What about Bob?
It starts with a goldfish.
Is this a fish called Wanda?
I thought about that similarity.
Yeah, it is. Starts right there, yeah.
But this goldfish is a little bit different. It's not so much being threatened to be eaten. It's Bill Murray's goldfish. I mean, it's a goldfish named Gil.
You know what? It is threatened to be eaten in this movie. Maybe it's like Chekhov's goldfish. If you have a goldfish, it's going to be threatened to be eaten at one point in a movie. Because fish called Wanda, it's the
same
thing.
Or Freud's goldfish.
Freud's goldfish, for sure.
Tell me again why you want to devour the goldfish. Perhaps it represents your genitals.
I don't know. I'm not an analyst.
What a pervy guy, that guy.
Yeah, and he features prominently in this movie. At least his head does.
And his name.
But so this is Bob is the owner of this goldfish. He is a man with a few problems. Mm-hmm. He's extremely germophobic. He seems to have some OCD tendencies. He can barely leave his apartment every day. And he really has to work to get himself out the door.
Yeah, but he has a job. I totally forgot about this in the movie. He like has a job, I guess, where he like punches in and then calls people on the phone.
Yeah.
But that's never explained.
No.
But when I thought back about this movie, I was like, how did he survive in the world before this? But he has a job.
I mean, people survive.
Yeah.
There are tons of people who are living with all sort of mental health problems.
Yes.
And they're doing it, man. They got this.
Yeah. Working from home, working from their job.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So he makes it out of the apartment, but it's a difficult journey.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we also have the other major character, Dr. Leo Spaceman, no, Dr. Leo Marvin, played by Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah. And he's a very successful therapist.
Egotistical son of a bitch, too.
He seems like it. He sort of, we see him first, he's sort of talking on the phone and he's informing his wife that Good Morning America is thinking about interviewing him.
Yeah, it's like he's trying to date his wife or something because he's like, I'm very important, wife. You know, you have to really recognize my importance here. Yeah,
I'm seeing someone. But while he is getting ready to go on his vacation, he gets a call from another psychiatrist who tells him that he is quitting the business and he wants the doctor to help him with a very special patient. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he thinks that only
Dr. Marvin can do it because, you know, Dr. Marvin deserves to win a Nobel Prize, as he says.
Yeah, I love his, like, reverse psychology here where he's like, I know you don't like flattery, but you deserve a Nobel Prize, like, right after. Yeah, it's great. And he's like, all right, I'll take him on after my vacation, you know. But the vacation is the important thing. I'm going away, and on my vacation, I'm going to have Good Morning America interview me. And that's the most important thing in this movie.
Yeah. So he calls his secretary and gives her the word, and if this guy calls to, you know, but he's already called. And in fact, he's on his way up. It's his next appointment. Isn't that funny?
Bill Murray is just behind him and puts his hands over his eyes. No one will ever believe you. Thanks, Bill. Yeah, so he's there and he's ready for his first session, and it goes weirdly.
I think it goes pretty well. I mean, yeah, Bill Murray is a little bit, you know, all over the place, but the doctor recommends his book, which I'm sure has all the solutions in it for Bill Murray, called Baby Steps.
Right, which is his own book, the doctor's own book. He's making a sale, right?
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. That's a classic trick. Probably learned that from his professors or something.
God, those textbooks are so expensive.
Say, isn't this your name? But it's a really good session, and Bill Murray is stoked to, like, you know, have more, except, you know, he gets informed that the doctor's going to be on vacation for a month.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a problem.
This movie already feels like it's written by someone who's never been to therapy once. Like, it's written by someone who doesn't know at all what, like, anything is.
Somebody who needs therapy?
saying what Bob is. Because they're like, oh, you're a narcissistic person, but that Bob doesn't have that. And then, like, everything he's called in this movie, a sociopath or whatever, no, he's just, like, crazy clingy. He has attachment disorder, which is, like, the one thing they have, like, right in this movie.
All right, Dr. Blaine.
The doctor's in, baby. No.
Let's see your credentials, biznitch. I'm sorry I called you biznitch.
No, it really
offended
me.
I lashed out because I need approval from people. And
yeah, okay.
I put other people
thought it was
down.
A bit Tourette's-y, but that's fine. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he says that he fakes Tourette's in this movie so he knows he doesn't have it. There's a lot of stuff like that where he kind of just wants a friend, and a therapist is someone who needs to listen to you, so he fakes all these maladies so that someone can just at least listen to him.
That's actually a good idea.
I've known
some people
to do it.
I think I'm getting Tourette's. Fuckers.
But yeah, it's kind of like, if you really look at this movie, it's really sad. Like, Bob just needs a friend, and this guy won't give it to him. He won't hand over that friendship to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's not his job to be his friend. It's his job to be his therapist.
God, just love me, Rob.
But so he goes on his vacation, and Bob does not last, like, a hot minute before he starts getting twitchy, and he calls the number that the doctor has left him, and he gets the exchange service, and they're not going to give him the doctor's number of where he's vacationing, so he hires a prostitute played by Tony Soprano's sister.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
To call and pretend to be the doctor's sister, and it's like an emergency.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they get him to, like, put it on the line, right?
Exactly, yeah. His sister Lily is one of the characters in this movie, too, who lives in Chicago, so she's kind of not part of this movie yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he gets through to the doctor, and, you know, Dr. Leo's like, don't ever do that again. Click.
Yeah.
And so Bob is a little desperate now. And he fakes his own death. So that's the next level, the next step you do. You prank phone call someone, and then you immediately jump to faking your death for attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the level on this one.
It happens to the best of us. That's why you weren't on those podcasts last month.
Wait, you didn't tell anyone that I did that. Well, that was the big deal. You just,
whatever.
Damn it, Rob.
But so the family's on their vacation. They're enjoying themselves. The doctor is getting ready for his interview, thinking about, you know, how he wants to pose next to the fireplace and where he wants to put his bust of Sigmund Freud, which seems sort of phallic. There's something about the head. I don't know. Anyway. And who should happen to show up at his door but Bob?
Yeah, and Bob's already, like, kind of accosted him at the bus stop in the small right. town, and these neighbors of the doctor, Dr. Leo stole the house out from under these neighbors of his. They wanted to buy that house. And so they kind of tell Bob where Leo lives just to get back at Leo. Because right. Leo, kind of a prick.
Yes.
Kind of a prick. So Bob shows
up. Or he's setting reasonable boundaries. One of those. He's either a prick or he's setting reasonable boundaries. Go on.
Yeah. have you ever tried to set boundaries with, like, you are a prick?
No. I'm just the person who gets boundaries set against me.
Oh, okay. So he shows up and he really ingratiates himself into the family. He's a very complimentary person.
Yeah.
The family kind of falls in love with him.
Yeah.
And
everybody else seems to see that he is a little bit off, but the family is really generous.
Yeah, and the young daughter in the family is going to go boating, and she's a little nervous because she likes one of the guys in the boat. And then she sees Bob walking down the road. He's been cast out by Leo, and Bob goes sailing with her.
Yeah, that's right. Well, he gets sort of tied to the mast like Odysseus.
The sirens.
But it's a kind of sailing.
Yeah, it's a kind of sailing. But he's already making breakthroughs with this family, which is pretty nice.
Well, I mean, at first it seems like they are just actually really good at dealing with people with mental health issues. Like
right.
they're generous and kind and they listen to people, which seems like those are things that you would need as a mental health professional. The doctor does not seem to have those qualities.
No. And his family's put up with his narcissistic personality disorder for so long. So they're good at this.
Yeah. And it, like, part of his sort of the unbearable nature of the doctor on his family is that he is sort of obsessed with seeing his son dive. Do his first dive, learn to dive. It's a big moment in a child's life when they jump into the water for the first time.
It's a baptism, if you will.
Oh, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Penetrating the surface of the water.
Okay, that's perverted.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Jeez.
So he is trying to teach his son how to dive when he sees Bob on the mast.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's doing it by holding onto his son's swim shorts while his son sort of like arches over the water prepared to. And it's a trust exercise.
Really, yes, exactly.
You know, if you ruin this, then your whole relationship is gone. Trust me. But don't, because I'm not worthy of it.
But that's kind of what he tells his dad. He's like, I will sue you for murder if you drop me in the water. And the son's played by Charlie Corsmo, who we've talked about before. He's on Hook.
Yep. Can't hardly wait.
He's just a delight in this movie.
He's great.
Yeah. He's so funny.
Yeah. But, yeah, the doctor sees Bob sailing by and startled drops his son.
Right. It's like the dropping the coffee mug in the kitchen when you hear bad news, but like dropping his son into the water. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he hurts that relationship.
He hurts that
pretty bad. And then he goes and he yells at his daughter for being with Bob.
Right.
And they have these puppets.
Oh my God, the puppets.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, Daddy, not here.
Anna. Anna.
I know you won't listen to your father, but you always listen to me. So I'm asking you not to see Bob Wiley.
Daddy, I am just...
I can't hear you. Where are you, Anna?
I am just having fun with my friends.
And Bob Wiley.
Yes, and Bob Wiley.
Bob Wiley is your father's patient.
Bob Wiley is a very sensitive person.
Your father's sensitive?
Bob listens to people.
Your father listens to people, except when he's up here in Lake Winnipesaukee.
That's bad. That's some weird stuff.
Yeah, she's also so embarrassed to have to go use these in public.
Yeah, my mom was going to go into play therapy at one point.
Oh no,
as a play therapist, and like she would have had to use the puppets, but she didn't. But
yeah,
oh man, I can only imagine as a kid if you're like gone through some trauma and then some adult that you're like, oh good, this person is it knows what's up. You know, they're competent.
Uh-huh.
And then they come out, they're like, hello, Billy! like, oh, Jesus, this guy's insane.
Well, I get the theory behind it.
Yeah.
It probably works pretty well with certain people in certain conditions.
Yeah, yeah.
You probably don't want to use it with your family. It's or a little
like
bit creepy.
Your 18-year-old daughter? Like,
well,
probably not.
Yeah. I mean, 18-year-old daughter played by like a 28-year-old.
Yes, entirely. She looks like she came from, like, Dawson's Creek High.
Apparently, she is only 10 years younger than the woman who plays her mom.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yay, 1991!
Thanks, Hollywood.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But Richard Dreyfuss is slowly going insane. They invite Bob to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
A friendly sort of thing. Oh, because we forgot to mention that the reason why Bob is sticking around is because the doctor has advised him to go on a vacation from his problems. To go back to New York City and take a vacation from your problems. Whenever you have a problem, you're just like, ah, I'm on vacation.
Yeah. And then he shows up in a don't hassle me, I'm local shirt, which is so funny.
Yeah.
So stupid. Yeah. And he's there. He's going to take a vacation in this town. He's even staying with the neighbors.
Yes. But so he gets invited to dinner, and he's Bob.
Right.
He over-exaggeratedly enjoys the food, making, like, big sounds.
Yeah. They're a little weird.
Some people are like that.
All right.
I've seen that.
Okay. At this point, has he already taught the kid how to jump into the water? I think he has.
Oh, I guess so. Because yeah.
He comes back from sailing and he's very afraid. He's like, I'm afraid of the water still, but on a boat, it's okay.
Yeah.
But to dive, that would be very scary. And he kind of reverse psychologies Charlie Corsmo into jumping in the water.
I like that scene a lot.
It was a very good scene.
And, you know, it's great to see Bill Murray and Charlie Corsmo's, like, you know,
yeah,
friendship.
Yeah, like blossom there. Well, also because it becomes so hilarious later on this night when Bill Murray stays over
the
night and sleeps in the same bedroom as the son.
Because after the dinner, they can't bring Bill Murray back home because he left his car back at the, you know, wherever
Richard
the boat
Dreyfuss,
was.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the puppets.
And it's pouring rain outside, so they won't kick him out of the house.
Yeah, it would be an awful thing to do. So they let him stay. He sleeps in Charlie's room, and Richard Dreyfuss is not happy about it.
Well, no, he has a big interview in the morning, you know. Good Morning America, it's the pinnacle of his career.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Good Morning America is a pinnacle of anyone's career. But
if Good Morning America was like, rewatchability, we want to come out to your vacation house on Lake Wanawano, what's it, and interview you, wouldn't you say yes? Wouldn't that be a big deal?
Well, they wouldn't do that anymore because I've already slandered them on this podcast. Fuck you, Good Morning America. No, I would go out to that. I would skip a vacation for sure. For whoever is hosting Good Morning America now.
I don't know.
I'm sure it's the ghost of Regis Philbin.
No? I don't know. I don't watch television in the morning.
Yeah, we're cord cutters. All right. So
they
stay over the night. There's some hilarity there with, like, I need some peace and quiet. And Bob being like, I'll be quiet. Charlie going, I'll be peace. It's so funny.
I love it. They're like a bunch of kids.
Yeah. It's so great to see them.
Much the consternation of Dr. Marvin.
Exactly.
But the next morning, the big interview comes, and he is very anxious to get Bob out of the house before anybody gets there. But just as he's leaving, Good Morning America shows up, and they get the idea that he wants the patient, Bob, to be in the interview, and he can't convince them that he doesn't.
Yeah, he's trying to be polite to Good Morning America, and he has that thing where he's like, Bob, I've worked so hard for this my career. And he's like, a lot of schooling. And he's like, no, I need you to leave, and I need you to make an excuse. And they're like, Bob, are you leaving? And he's like, yeah, Dr. Marvin doesn't want me to be on the – he's like, no, you're on the show.
Yeah.
It's a great little moment, and they bring him on, and he and Leo, like, chokes on the show. And
understandably so.
Yeah.
This patient has been foisted upon him.
Now, Dr. Marvin, exactly how does baby steps work on someone like Bob?
Well, Joan, I'm very proud of Baby Steps and enormously gratified by its success. I think the greatest challenge, aside from the writing, is finding ways to make the ideas within it accessible to laymen as well as to my colleagues.
Bob, tell us your impressions of Baby Steps.
Mashed potatoes and gravy, Marie.
Well, he's used to choking, too. He choked the night before, and Bob saved his life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Bob also saves the interview by lauding Leo a lot and talking him up. And he's really, really nice to Leo, actually. Mm-hmm.
He saves the day.
Yeah, but Bob wins the interview and Leo doesn't. So it's another slight against Leo.
Yeah.
And this calls for drastic measures.
Yeah. He takes Bill Murray and he tries to get him committed.
Yeah. That's brutal.
Yeah.
You can't just – that's – you know, you took an oath. I'm sure a Hippocratic oath.
Yeah.
So he's a hypocrite. So he just put Bob in the insane asylum.
Yeah.
That's what it means, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. But they like call him and tell him that he's got to come pick him up because he's clearly not insane. He's there entertaining all of the orderlies with his psychiatry jokes.
He just becomes Bill Murray, like would in life, just gathering an audience and
psychiatry.
Yeah, doing a little lounge act for everyone.
Yeah. Hey, what's your illness?
Name that dysfunction. Woo! Yeah, so he has to be brought back and
but he kicks Bill Murray on the car.
Yeah. And Leo gets a ticket and a flat tire and mud on him.
Yeah,
and he's
through all these unfortunate events, he doesn't end up showing back at home until like very late at night. He looks like shit. He's a real mess. Mm-hmm. And he goes into the backyard and people yell, "Surprise!" And it's his surprise birthday party.
And he like wanders out like a babe in the woods, deer in headlights. He looks like shit. And everyone's like, "What the fuck happened?" He's like, "I'm so happy to see everyone. And Bob's not here. And they brought Lily from Chicago."
Yeah.
And then Bob steps into frame, puts his arm around Lily. And Leo assaults him.
Yeah. He tackles him like he flies like Superman.
He does. Over like 7 people into Bob. It's insane.
It's insane. Like you wouldn't think that Richard Dreyfuss with those little legs could get that sort of springiness.
No, that was his opus.
But yeah, and you know, after this, everybody, especially all of Dr. Marvin's psychology friends, are concerned for Dr. Marvin, and they end up sedating him.
Mm-hmm.
Bob gives the other doctor some great advice about which antipsychotic medication to put him on.
Because Bob's been on all of them. He knows.
That's right. He's an expert.
Exactly.
In the field.
Yeah. And then the family, very, beside themselves, grieve about this whole situation. Is just like, Leo probably doesn't want you around when he wakes up. You should leave, Bob. And Bob does. You know, he respects the family. And
kind of. He is a little bit of a dick about it.
Yeah, well, these are his favorite people in the world, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a comedy because the family at no point, like, realizes how fucked up that...
Oh, yeah. Like, the non-comedy version of this is, like, Fear or Funny Games. There is a non-comedy version of this that is terrifying, for sure.
I think somebody did recut this movie as, like, for the trailer as a thriller.
Oh, yeah. We should put that up to show people. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But they ask him to go.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, though... The doctor has snuck out and, like, walked to town and stolen a bunch of stuff from a sporting goods store or something.
Yeah, stump remover, which is just black powder explosives.
Yeah, yeah. And he...
Good on you, America, for selling that. He passes over the guns and the compound bows to, like, oh, there's so many weapons available. Why?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so he finds Bob... And he ties him up with a bunch of black powder, saying that it's a therapy.
Death therapy.
Death therapy, which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Bill Murray has 10 minutes to live, and he realizes...
That's like a Madonna song, isn't it?
Okay. Bill Murray has 10 minutes to live?
Yeah.
Yeah.
4 minutes to the end of the world? Or?
Like a prayer.
Sweet. Anyway, Leo feels that he's free, says as much, and at the same time, Bill Murray frees himself...
Yeah.
And everyone meets in the lawn. And Leo's wondering where the bombs are. They're in the house. The house explodes. And Leo goes into a catatonic state.
Yeah. Which goes on for quite a while.
Yeah.
And he's only sort of awoken way later when Bill Murray, when Bob and his sister are getting married.
Right.
And the priest asks, anybody have any objections?
Right. And he stands up and says, no! The whole movie of While You Were Sleeping happens in this movie, like in between two cuts. It's crazy. So Leo's freed. Bob is married to his sister. And the last thing we hear, we see on screen is that Bob becomes a psychiatrist.
Right. And he wrote the best-selling book, Death Therapy, and is being sued by Dr. Marvin.
Yeah, just can't let it go, Marvin. Can't let it go, Leo. Come on.
Well, I mean, he did steal it.
Yeah, that's
I mean, are we crazy here? Bob's the bad guy, right?
What about Bob? It's in the title.
This is a tragedy, this movie. This is the tragedy of Dr. Marvin.
Well, I think that Dr. Marvin is pretty bad at his job if he can't stop a guy from stalking him. No, that's mean. No, that's bad.
Okay, well, we're going to get into all of that and more after this break. We got some trivia. I got the behind-the-scenes stuff.
What? Awesome.
After this.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to Rewatchability. We are talking about What About Bob?
What about Bob?
What about him? I have some trivia, which will maybe answer that question for you, Brian.
Oh, my God. Okay. So I have to answer questions, answer another question?
That's right.
This is riddles on riddles.
I am going to blow your mind with these. And I hope you haven't done any research because these are freely available on the internet.
I have not.
Okay.
Out of respect,
so,
not laziness.
Bill Murray's performance in this is much lauded. It's considered one of his best performances. And in fact, one director spent a significant amount of money, $250,000. I didn't know that numbers went that high. Of his own money to unsuccessfully procure Bill Murray an acting nomination at the Academy Awards. Which director did that?
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Why can't I remember his name? The director of the Ghostbusters. I'm sure it's got to be
Ivan Reitman?
Ivan Reitman.
Well, you are totally wrong. That's a really bad guess.
Steven Spielberg?
That's correct.
What? Really?
You should have just eliminated all the directors that couldn't afford $250,000. That's a lot of money for Spike Lee or something.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, I mean, I think that's amazing because, first of all, I can't even think of any Steven Spielberg movies which have Bill Murray in them.
Right.
You know, he hasn't been this is a friend of mine, this is somebody that I use all the time. However, he has done a fuck ton of movies with Richard Dreyfuss. Nothing for him. But that pissed him off real good.
Oh, God. We've had so many close encounters, Spielberg. You wouldn't. Yeah, that's brutal. I mean, Dreyfuss's acting was great in this movie, too. Although he did play one note.
I don't know. I don't know about Dreyfuss's performance myself. I think that it's good at points, but also it does get a bit cartoony at the end.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, you have siblings, right? You've been frustrated to the umpteenth thing by your siblings.
Sure.
That amount of frustration, you can't even talk. Words fail you. You just try to, you know, and that's what Richard Dreyfuss does.
For sure. He does that. He does that pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good performance. I'm not saying anything bad against him.
But I understand where Spielberg's coming from because the Oscars don't.
Spielberg didn't say anything shitty about Richard Dreyfuss. I think I should just make that clear. He was just like, Bill Murray's performance is good.
Right.
I'm drawing the connection that, you know, Dreyfuss probably feels a bit snubbed.
Yeah, well, it's a big omission. What I think he's getting at, too, is that comedic actors are never nominated for acting awards. You know, it's always the dramas. It's always the people that take off a wig and cry a lot, you know?
For sure.
And there's a lot of acting that goes into making people laugh, too.
Yeah. You know?
So
yeah.
We should recognize that as well.
Well, I think he won an MTV award, so.
Oh, that's the horrible thing is that the MTV awards always give the comedic actors. Like Jim Carrey got one.
Yeah.
But no Oscar. Come on now. No. No. Anyway.
Okay, question the second.
Okay.
This one is really hard, so I don't expect you to get it. You might just want to quit right now. Frank Oz.
That's inspiring.
Is well known for his connection to Henson Productions,
yep.
Jim Henson. Mm-hmm. But which cast member is also known for performing characters, particularly on Sesame Street, including Zoe and Prairie Dawn?
Oh, the mother actor in this movie.
That is wrong. You
what?
Suck today. Sorry to bring you down, but you're terrible.
I'm going to need therapy after this.
You're going to need so much therapy. It is Fran Brill who plays the sister.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
she
cool.
is the she's a puppeteer. She's from the Henson Workshop and she's done a whole bunch of voices on Sesame Street over the years. And those are her two main characters. Zoe is basically like Orange Elmo, but probably not as pervy. And Prairie Dawn, I don't know, but it sounds like a white supremacist organization.
Prairie Dawn. That's so funny.
No. It's a cute little girl Muppet. You know, it's like
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, yeah.
Okay.
You remember the Sesames?
I do remember the Sesames.
All right. So, question the third, and I really hope you get this one because, you know, you just – not much reason to live if you don't.
What is Bill Murray?
Shit.
What about Bob?
Damn it.
Okay, no, right. What is the question?
Okay. Famously, Bill Murray and Richard Dreyfuss did not get along during the making of this film, but – can you name three other people Bill Murray has not gotten along with?
What?
And a bonus, if you can name one more person that Richard Dreyfuss hasn't gotten along with.
Well, yeah. No, this is so hard.
Is it?
Bill Murray hasn't gotten along with, I'm going to say, Dan Aykroyd, because who can get along with Dan Aykroyd?
Dan
Fuck
Aykroyd calls Bill Murray the Murricane.
Just because it has Kane in it. He just likes anything with Kane in it. No, is that one?
Maybe.
All right. I'll give up right now. I don't even – Bill Murray hasn't gotten along with – give me clues.
You know what? I'll just tell you.
Okay.
Because it's obvious that you are a worshiper in the Temple of Murray. You have blinded yourself from the fact that he can sometimes be somebody who exhibits bad behavior. I will tell you some of the people who he
Chevy
sees.
Chevy Chase.
That is actually one of them.
There we go. Because no one can get along with Chevy Chase either.
That's true.
See, I don't think it's Bill Murray's fault.
It's like
here.
A feedback loop. Well, there's probably a lot of strong personalities clashing.
If you're like Tom Hanks, then like I'm like that's Bill Murray's fault. But if it's not Tom Hanks,
I mean, if you can name three people, I mean, if I can find a whole bunch of people who have a problem with Bill Murray or working with Bill Murray, then I think that's some sort of sign. Not to say that he's
sure.
always a bad guy. And I think that he's mellowed out a lot.
Yeah, but I think Chevy Chase is just like, that's an ego thing. Like, Chevy Chase just wanted to be the biggest star in the world.
Well, famously, they got into a big row when Chevy Chase came back to host Saturday Night Live because he was, of course, part of the original cast. And then Bill Murray was part of the cast. And they'd known each other from the Lampoon years. And they got in a big fight, but they made up during Caddyshack, which they were also both in.
All right.
But some other people who Bill Murray have got
okay, have I'll not have gotten along for with. Every one of these. Okay, let's do it.
Sean Young. Unimpeachable Sean Young.
Well,
he's never done anything weird.
I mean, I don't even need to say anything for that. Okay,
okay
go
but
on.
But Richard Donner, the director of Scrooged.
Okay, yeah, but like he's one of the reindeer, you know? That's not good. Okay, another one.
Harold Ramis. After Groundhog Day, they didn't speak for 20 years. You knew
sure
that.
It wasn't 10,000 years? Okay, Harold Ramis, that's fair.
Lucy Liu?
Lucy Liu?
Yeah, that's right.
What? He didn't get along with Lucy Liu?
Remember when Bill Murray was Bosworth?
Yeah, Bosworth
on Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels. That's so funny.
Apparently, he said that Lucy Liu couldn't act. And yeah, they had some times.
And then she martial arted him into the dirt.
I think she threatened to. Also, Angelica Houston.
Oh, I would never even pick a fight with Angelica Houston.
No.
She would murder.
She's a witch.
She could, like, yeah, I'm intimidated by that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But they apparently did not get along on the set of Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I already said Chevy Chase. Richard Dreyfuss also has a reputation for not getting along with people. So, yeah, these are strong personalities clashing.
Yeah, but just aliens.
Just aliens. Well, one of those aliens was his co-star in Jaws, Robert Shaw.
Oh, yeah.
Though he has also sort of talked about that and sort of said that it was sort of overblown and it wasn't as big of a deal as he said it was. But he also didn't get along with... Fuck, what's his name? Oliver Stone, who directed W, where Richard Dreyfuss played Dick Cheney. Now, you'll notice he didn't get an Oscar nomination for that. So maybe that's why he was pissed off. Like, Christian Bale does it. God damn it.
Yeah, I mean, the character of Leo kind of just seems like the character of Richard Dreyfuss, to be honest. Have you seen The Goodbye Girl?
No.
At all. Neil Simon, he's in that, and he plays an actor who is an egotistical actor. I feel like he's just very good at playing egotistical people because Richard Dreyfuss, I think, maybe has a little bit of an ego, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
He had some troubles in the 80s, too, like a well-publicized cocaine addiction.
Right.
And it sort of concluded with him crashing his car into a tree while under the influence. And
so he knows Dan Aykroyd. That's good.
Well, this was before that.
Okay.
I think this was after he sort of like burnt out. This was during his comeback phase when he was doing like Another Stakeout and that sort of stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
but
yeah.
About this movie, he specifically said, talking to the AV Club in 2009, Dreyfuss says, "Funny movie. Terribly unpleasant experience. We didn't get along, me and Bill Murray. But I've got to give it to him. I don't like him, but he makes me laugh, even now. I'm also jealous that he's a better golfer than I am. It's a funny movie. No one ever comes up to you and says, 'I identify with the patient.' They always say, 'I have patients like that. I identify with your character.' No one ever says they're willing to identify with the other character." Which,
yeah, I don't know. That's
ego.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's not my experience with the movie
at
all.
That's a very Dr. Leo Marvin thing to say.
It is. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. He seems exactly like that guy.
Meanwhile, Bill Murray has also admitted that it was a bit rocky. He said, "But what about Bob? It's entertaining. Everybody knows somebody like that Bob guy. Richard Dreyfuss and I didn't get along in the movie particularly, but it worked for the movie. I mean, I drove him nuts, and he encouraged me to drive him nuts."
That's a great way of letting yourself off the hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was some other, like, bad behavior on the set. Like, this movie was...
Charlie Corsmo and the Prostitutes? I heard about this.
No.
That trailer was rocking.
Well, one of the producers of this movie, Laura Siskin, she at one point got into a fight with Bill Murray and he threatened to throw her across the parking lot and at one point did throw her glasses across the parking lot. And at one point...
Next will be you. That's horrible.
Though she says it was playful, over an agreement, he picked her up and threw her in the lake.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that just seems like a little violent, pushing that line, pushing that envelope there, Bill.
Yeah, she has since said, "I've produced 12 movies since then. It is not common behavior."
Imagine if it was. You'd stop producing movies right quick.
Yeah.
Well, good on her for surviving that movie, and fuck you, Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
It's disappointing, but I mean, like... Everybody loves him. I think he's fun. I hope he's mellowed out and he's like a more, you know, everybody makes mistakes and Richard Dreyfuss is a jerk.
Well, osteoporosis will do that to you. He's old. He's very old.
He's old.
He has to mellow out.
But I think we have to call him out on his bad behavior.
Yes, and, that's not allowed. That's not cool, man.
In the 80s and 90s, he was particularly well known for,
Yeah, his hijinks.
Like,
which is probably what they said they were in the 90s. Like, oh, it's just hilarious hijinks where he threatens people. That's mainly women, and that's cool. that's fine, Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the other people that were involved in this movie, Alan Sargent, who wrote the screenplay along with Laura Siskind. I think they are romantically involved and also producing partners. They went on to work on Spider-Man's 2 and 3, the Sam Raimi ones.
Oh, okay.
So Alan Sargent wrote the screenplay and she produced them. And
I'm sorry for both of them.
Sorry for both. Spider-Man 2 was okay.
Yeah, was that the one where he goes all emo?
No, that was Spider-Man 3.
Oh, okay,
yeah, they were involved in that one. But then I think they were also involved in the first Spider-Man with Andrew Garfield, too.
That wasn't bad. I don't mind that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting because this guy, Alan Sargent, started his first credit is from 1956.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, this guy is like fucking old Hollywood. He was like
Jesus,
writing like old westerns or something like that.
God,
they're like,
damn,
give him a Spider-Man. He's like, well, let's make him an emo.
I just saw one of these emos. We need to put them in the movie.
Yeah.
Did this a lot in Rawhide back in the day.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Wow.
Yeah.
What a breadth of experience that guy's had from the 50s to the, I mean, half a century. Jesus.
Do you know about the sort of future careers of anybody else in this movie?
No, I mean, Charlie Corsmo has gone on to do some teen movies that we've talked about in the later 90s.
Well, do you know that now he is retired from acting and he is a law professor?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good
He doesn't list the movies in his bio. Right. Because I think they were used against him in court. Sir, can you confirm or deny that in Hook, you said?
He's like, I'm going to run home. I can't do this. Yeah. Yeah, it must get annoying when you leave acting and you go to another profession. You're like, oh, I got a lot of papers to read. Just going to dive in. They're like, aren't you afraid of diving? He's like, fuck you, man. Like, so much of your life must be impacted by the acting that you've done in the past. But that's really cool that he has led two very different lives.
Yeah.
From an actor to a law professor. That's awesome.
I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The other actors in this, Catherine Erbe.
Yeah.
She has, of course, shown up in Law & Order Criminal Intent.
Yeah. You like the Erbe, right? So that's good.
That's terrible.
All right. That's fair.
But I love the Erbe.
But she showed up.
Imagine she had like a weed brand.
Come to Canada. Get a weed brand.
That's what I do.
You're in Canada.
Whoa.
What? Weed's legal now?
Do you recognize the mom, Julie Hegarty?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen her in so much, I just don't know what I've seen her in. She's one of those actresses that has been in a lot.
She is one of those actresses. She was in Airplane, famously, and Airplane 2.
There you go.
And also coming up, she has a role, I'm not sure how big or small, in Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story.
Oh, cool.
Starring Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. Presumably she's playing an Asian person. That's the joke.
Punctuating your joke with that's the joke? Can we do that on the podcast all the time?
I can.
Okay. I just did, Blaine.
Well, I mean, it's because she said that stupid thing about, you know, she thinks she can say – she thinks she should be able to play anyone. And I don't know. I think that maybe she's being a bit arrogant about that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. She also came to the defense of Woody Allen.
Oh.
Which is so interesting.
Good segue, Blaine, because – at a certain point, they wanted other people to be in and make this movie.
Woody Allen as the psychiatrist?
Well, the first person that they wanted to direct this was Jerry Marshall.
Okay.
And in that version, it would have been Robin Williams as Bob.
Right.
And Patrick Stewart.
What?
Wait, why did I say it like Sean Connery?
Yeah, that was
weird. Patrick Stewart.
Engage.
As Dr. Marvin.
Engage.
Engage. Number one.
This is Star Trek. What? What is going on here?
That would have been good. I think that would have been
fun. That would have been so much fun.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think it was Frank Oz who initially wanted Patrick Stewart for the role, but he ended up getting Richard Dreyfuss. Now, at one point, they did want the aforementioned Woody Allen to star in the movie.
As the neurotic.
As the doctor.
Oh, as a doctor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but the guy who is famous for being neurotic, they wanted to play the doctor?
Yeah.
And just get like someone really sane?
I could be wrong. They also wanted him to write and direct it.
Oh, God.
But, you know, the big problem was that there wasn't a romantic lead young enough, so.
Oh, God. Yeah, even Catherine Erbe was too old.
Yeah, he wanted to, like, and then, of course, the doctor dates the daughter. Nobody has a problem with that.
It's like.
God damn it.
Yeah, oh, that's funny because it's like Oedipal. What? Oh, God, Woody. That's funny. Ah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different type of movie.
It's a different type of movie. Well, it didn't happen.
I read
a lot of stuff on the internet about this movie because, like I said, I didn't have any strong memories of it, really. I haven't watched it in a long time. And, you know, it does feel like a movie that is sort of has one foot stuck in, like, the 80s Bill Murray. And also sort of points towards some of the more, like, melancholic insanity of later Bill Murray.
Yeah, for sure. I see that.
But a lot of people sort of, you know, think that, you know, it's a movie that is very messy, but works primarily because Bill Murray sort of pulls all the elements together.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with Frank Oz's direction too. I just love him as a director.
Well, he
allows the actors to do what they need to do and to get to where they need to get in the scene, and I really like that. And they'll run the scene until they get there, which I appreciate in a director. Mm-hmm. I think also there's so many good cuts in this movie, and there's so many good cutting back and forth between different scenes that I don't think was in the script that was then later found in the editing room. So I think this movie came together not only because of Bill Murray, but because of the talent behind the camera as well.
Yeah. Personally. That's fair. I mean, Frank Oz has done some good work, and he does an admirable job here.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, like, the premise is not exactly original. There are, like, such a tradition of movies, you know, where there is, like, a button-down guy who's trying to be responsible. Mm. He's a family man. He's the family. And then there's, like, the crazy guy who, is loud or, like, he lets it all hang out.
Yeah, Abbott and Costello. Like, it goes back to, like, the beginning of, like, vaudeville where you have the straight man and you have the zany guy.
Mm-hmm. But here, I mean, in certain ways, it does seem, like, a little bit, like, old and, like, you know, hackneyed.
Yeah, and watching the movie again just as, like, a writer, like, watching the beats of it, it was really messy that way.
Mm.
Like, there was – it did
– It did not save the cat.
And where was A Long Dark Night of the Soul, you know? But there was – usually you have, like, this – boiling of the frog a little bit, saving of the cat, boiling the frog. Well, usually you have that a little bit where, you know, Bob would slowly start getting worse and worse, or the family, you know, and you do have a bit of that, but Richard Dreyfuss hates him so much to begin with that it's, I think, part of the reason Richard Dreyfuss wasn't pursued for an Oscar is because he has to be so big to begin with Bob that at the end, he has nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And I think that if you had a bit more of a playful thing there where they actually do get along a little bit near the beginning, then you could have gone a little bit more the other way.
Well, Ebert thought that this was Bill Murray's best performance since Ghostbusters and loved the movie, but Siskel felt like it was ruined by Richard Dreyfuss's sort of performance at the end. And just like the unlikability of Richard Dreyfuss's character. And I can sort of see like where it's a confusing movie because, I mean, Richard Dreyfuss is the protagonist.
Yes.
Like, he is the one who is like, it's his story. He's the one who needs to come to like some sort of realization. However, the fact that the other character is Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Make it totally skews everything. And like, we want nothing better but for Bill Murray to destroy Richard Dreyfuss. Or to see like Richard Dreyfuss destroy himself because, you know, he's too uptight to let this guy's antics go.
Yeah. And I also feel that they could have gone further with that.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem like the movie is truncated a little bit. Like there was just another beat at the end where Richard Dreyfuss loses everything instead of just the house, you know, like it just feels like there could have been a little bit more. And that feels insane to say because his house does blow up at the end.
Yeah. But that's like almost cartoonish.
Yes. Yes.
Like it doesn't feel, I mean, if you think about it, like, his family could have fucking died.
Yeah, I know.
But it's just like, you know, it's played like a joke.
Yeah, exactly. Like he would have been responsible for murdering his own family.
Yeah.
You know? Well, that's the alternate ending. Right? Right there. That's the real comedy.
There is no Bob.
Yeah.
We've just seen you out here in the woods all alone.
Yeah, they should really cut What About Bob to be Fight Club. As like, that would be the best one. It's like the family is like, alternately, you're really nice and really egotistical. Like, we don't know.
It's like bipolar. Okay, so yeah. Blaine, you loved this movie when you were younger. How did it feel watching it now?
Oh, it's a little rusty. You know, I feel like I see the tarnished spots on it a little bit. It is not the perfect movie that I thought it was, but I still think that it's not. You said that a lot of people are talking about it. I don't. Not a lot of people talk about it in my circles. I don't read a lot about it online, but I think it is such an amazing movie and beyond its. It's more than the sum of its parts.
Right.
It doesn't have the most original idea. It doesn't have the best acting. Even the way it's written isn't the funniest. But somehow they come together and it makes me laugh every time I see it.
Yeah.
And I've seen it a lot. So it really doesn't get old for me in terms of making me laugh. And I think that's one of the biggest bases for rewatchability. So hey. I think it has a huge rewatchable factor in that it will always make me laugh at the very least. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I sort of agree with you. You said it's better than the sum of its parts, and it sort of is. I mean, it's a really fun movie that works even though it shouldn't at certain points.
Right.
I mean, it's so – yeah, in ways it's very formulaic, but there's freshness brought to it by the actors, all the actors, not just – Bill Murray. So yeah, I think it's a rewatchable film. I would rewatch it. Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Never again.
Well, we answered the question of What About Bob?
I'm never going to watch this movie.
Okay. That's too bad.
I think I'm having a breakdown here, Blaine.
Well, tell me about the cigar you're smoking.
I'm not smoking a cigar. Now you're delusional.
Oh, my God.
Tell me about the cigar you're smoking.
It's full of marijuana.
Oh.
That's why.
Then don't bogart that shit. That's rewatchability for this week. Don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts.
And you can rate us there, too.
That's right. Leave a little review. Mm-hmm. You can follow us on Facebook. Don't follow us too closely. We're on Twitter. And if you want to request a movie, you can do that by emailing rewatchability@gmail.com, or if you just want to say hi. And you can also request a movie by going to our website, rewatchability.com, and leaving a message on SpeakPipe. But don't go to our messaging service and ask where we live, because that is inappropriate, and we're asking you to stop.
Right.
You know who we're talking about. You. Yes. Stop.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.